Welcome to WPM, Writing, Publishing, and Marketing. This is the July of 2019 event here at WSCA Community Radios. And if you're listening to this podcast, this is the beginning of the third year of this show. We do it on the second Tuesday of every month. And we have three authors, one who talks about writing, one talks about marketing, one talks about publishing. They each do a brief presentation, and then we open it up for Q&A. This month we have Cynthia Neal talking about writing, Morgan Sylvia talking about publishing, and Margaret Porter talking about marketing. And if you're listening to this on the Mott Publishing site, I would recommend that you look at the other podcasts that are listed there. There's a lot of good information there. So we're going to start with Cynthia Neal.
Thank you. Writing is an affair of yearning for great voyages and hauling on frayed ropes, Israel Schenker. Red Smith was asked if turning out a daily column wasn't quite a chore. "Why no," deadpanned Red said. "You simply sit down at the typewriter, open your veins, and bleed." C.S. Lewis wrote, "We do not write in order to be understood. We write in order to understand." I have written to understand, but as a writer of historical fiction, I have felt the dead inspiring me to tell their stories. People ask what I do, and I say, "Work with the dead." Sounds morbid, but it has been exciting to dig and find treasures from all their heartaches and struggles. I do not romanticize and idealize the writing life, and of course you can tell by all the bleeding and rope burns that I don't. I also don't write for the marketplace and current fads and interests. I have written out of deep conviction after being inspired by ghosts of the past and experiencing a few paranormal kicks in the butt. After, I fall into an abyss of research and probe for truth and authenticity as I write their stories. This is the bleeding. And then I take it to the marketplace, and then there are the rope burns. In between the bleeding and rope burns, there is a lot of thrilling and satisfying experiences. I was a romantic 12-year-old writing poems and plays for my neighbors in a very small town in upstate New York. I would knock on their doors and perform for them and receive cookies or a quarter. We didn't have a library in town, but the bookmobile would arrive in town every so often, and it and the waterfalls and country I grew up in nurtured my writing dreams. My four historical fiction novels journey from Ireland during the Great Hunger, the famine, in 1847 to New York right through 1870. The titles are The Irish Dresser, Hope in New York City, Nora, and The Irish Milliner. There's truth, sorrow, tragedy, romance, political intrigue, and a whole lot of hope in these stories. I believe my protagonist, Nora McCabe, was real, because after the first two novels were published, I learned there was a Nora McCabe who traveled from Ireland to New York City in 1847. And I had chosen the name for the ship Nora traveled, the Star, only to find out later that there was a real ship called the Star that came to America with a family by the name of Neal, my last name. I haven't been alone on this harrowing journey. My ancestors have been whispering in my ears to tell their stories. I have two independent publishers who have been supportive, but I've had to pound the pavement to keep these stories alive over the years. A writer doesn't just hide in the attic to write. I've been on street corners hawking my books, attending festivals here and abroad, and have done many book events in libraries, schools, pubs, festivals, and conferences. I do living history presentations and dress as an immigrant, dance, use a terrible Irish accent, and in addition, I'm an extraordinary baker and host lovely teas at some of my events. I have published a cookbook, Pavlova in a Hat Box, Sweet Memories and Desserts, which I also promote. I've written a screenplay based on my four novels that is being pitched to producers and that has aroused some interest. I'm currently working on a novel about a Native American woman with French blood who lived during the time of the American Revolution. And I'm writing another cookbook entitled Transatlantic Tarts, Wee Tales and Recipes by Two Celtic Cake Queens. I'm writing it with a friend, my Scottish friend from Orkney. But after a winter of illness with Epstein-Barr, I'm taking it on much slower. I need more savoring. I need more spaciousness, stillness, and beauty. I needed to stop pounding the pavement and be grateful for all these writing experiences and to bask in what I've already accomplished. Even if I'm not an award-winning novelist, I am a novelist and a good one. I needed time to pull out the threads that were unraveling in my writing and spiritual life and stitch some new ones together. And so this is what I'm currently doing. Healing those rope burns and learning that the voyage I have right now is already great. Time to float on calm waters beneath an umbrella with pen in hand, maybe a glass of wine, with much more to come. And so I thought I would read from my last novel in the Irish series, the Irish Dresser series it's called, and the screenplay is the Irish Dresser series. And this takes place during the time of the Civil War in New York City, primarily, although she does go to Gettysburg after the battle. But this time is, the scene I'm going to read is when she's looking for a soldier, a love, and he's based on a real person who lived. He's the son, Edward Knox, of Charles Knox, the hatmaker. And my character is a milliner. So she goes to McSorley's, which I don't know if any of you have been to McSorley's in New York City. It is fantastic. It's one of the oldest pubs in the country. And McSorley himself, after the Battle of Gettysburg, served a turkey dinner to all the soldiers returning from the 69th Regiment. And believe it or not, the turkey bones are hanging from the rafters. Visiting is, I did a book launch there for this book. It is, you feel the ghosts, and it is fascinating to be there. The turkey bones are a little too much. But I'm going to read from the scene where she tries to go to McSorley's to look for her love. Notice, no back room in here for ladies, is the sign that meets her gaze when she walks up to the big black doors. I'll just rush in before their drunken stupor eyes, and then Edward will see me before I get thrown out. Nora takes a deep breath and pulls open the doors and sprints inside the dark tavern. The thick sawdust on the floor was made for men's heavy boots and not the delicate Victorian spats Nora is wearing. As she slips to the floor and onto her backside, she inhales the sour scent of ale mixed with onions and smoke from corn cobs. The atmosphere is thick with smoke, and she can't make out any of the men's faces but one. She supposes it is McSorley himself, who leans over, peering into her face, looking like he wears the head of a big old onion that he smells of. "Madam, I'm sorry, but we don't serve ladies." He helps her to her feet, hands her a small pewter mug of ale, and ushers her out the doors as the men in the tavern shriek and cheer. Before McSorley slams the black doors behind her, he says, "When ye finish my ale, that is only brewed for the male species, ye can leave the cup to the side of the door, and you do well to never set foot in my tavern again." Nora drinks the ale in a couple of swigs and places the cup near the door. So her Edward Knox is not at the old house or home of McSorley's. Surely he would have seen her if he was, and he'd be next to her side right now. Where is this lover who thought it best to care for his city than for her? She shakes the sawdust off her skirt, straightens her bonnet, and walks towards home. Feeling a few moments of disgrace, she smiles and chuckles to herself. 'Tis glory itself that I, Nora McCabe, walked boldly inside McSorley's tavern and lived to tell the tale. And I got to act this out with, I'm a member of Artists Without Walls in New York City, and one of the founders played McSorley, and I was Nora, and it was a lot of fun, and he was escorting me out with a little pewter mug of ale. Thank you. I hope I didn't go over.
No, it's fine. Next, we have Morgan Sylvia.
Thank you. So the topic that I'm going to be speaking on is publishing. And the first thing that I want to say about publishing is that if it's done correctly, it can be a bridge between a writer and a vast audience. If it's done incorrectly, it can be a bridge that breaks while you're three steps in and you're plummeting down into some abyss or a rushing river or something. The industry has changed a lot with the onset of the internet. A lot of the old school ways things were done have kind of fallen by the wayside once we saw the rise of vanity publishing and small publishing. There are a lot of pitfalls for people to watch for in this industry. And you still see a lot of predatory publishers out there. There are some great ones, but there also are a lot of vanity publishers, which I understand that you guys had a run-in with a similar type of company. And there are people out there that just basically kind of dangle the dream in front of people and say, yes, I can publish you, and you'll have your book in print with a beautiful cover. And what they don't mention or try to make it look like that's part of the deal is that, you know, the writer ends up paying for it. Yeah. It's one thing if you decide to self-publish. I've gone that route. My latest release, As the Seas Turn Red, is an ocean-based poetry collection. I chose to self-publish that one, various reasons I won't get into. But my other two novels were gone. I put out through indie presses. And I'm kind of sort of flirting with a couple of bigger publishers. One thing that is very important for any writer to do if they're looking into publishing is research. There's a lot of sites out there. There are sites like Predators and Editors that will warn people about publishers that prey on people, publishers that don't do what they should. And there's a lot of reasons for that. Sometimes people get into starting a publishing company and they initially have all the right intentions, and then they just realize that, you know, they got in over their head or something hits them and they just kind of go down a hole. My first poetry collection, you're not going to see it because that publisher apparently went mad and vanished and has my rights, so that book's out of print. I'm just waiting for the contract to expire and then I'll probably find that a new home. I've been through that as well. It's very important for writers to pay very close attention to anything they sign. And sometimes you'll see sort of convoluted wording. I've walked away from, I believe at this point, 4 bad contracts because I spotted the red flags. The first one, it was almost kind of funny. The first one, I was actually kind of chatting with an agent at the time I had submitted to him, and it was an offshoot of the work. So when I got an offer on it, I just let him know, like, hey, I've got an offer on this, because he hadn't decided whether or not to represent me at that time. But I was also concerned about one of the clauses. I was like, what do you think of this? And he basically said, that's absolutely insane. They wanted rights to me to basically anything I ever wrote, ever. They would have right of first refusal. I would not have had the ability to renegotiate that at any time. It was ridiculous. And people have actually signed contracts like that. You might as well sell your soul if at that point, because, I mean, you can get out of it, but then you've got a costly legal battle, and it's, you know, there's a lot of traps. I've been lucky in that, like, I am a member of some really good writers groups. Locally, there's the New England Horror Writers. I'm also a member of a couple smaller groups, Tuesday Mayhem Society, and I've kind of got a pretty good support system. And I've also been fortunate enough to, with anthologies so far, I've always worked with great editors that were always on the up and up. So I guess one key piece of advice that I would give anybody who's listening out there who has maybe delved into writing or wants to get into writing is don't sign anything. If you don't know what you're doing, find somebody who understands it and have them look the contract over, because it's much better to not put something out than to put it out and find that you're in a bad situation because you don't have your rights, or you owe this person money and they're holding your book, or there's a lot of things that could go wrong. With all that said, the dire warnings, we're also in, I think, a great age for publishing because we've got all these different venues. Like, you're seeing the rise of audiobooks, and you're seeing indie presses, which are doing really well. A lot of them are great. Like, I didn't put it out. This was out through Crossroads Press. They're a pretty solid little publisher. My first novel, Abode, a horror novel, that was out through Bloodshot Books, and they've both been great to work with. But you've also got to look at, another thing to look at when you're signing a contract is what sort of rights you're giving away. One of the things you want to look at is whether you're selling audio rights, whether you're selling international rights, whether you're selling various types of rights like that. So again, it's just very important for people to look at contracts and to pay attention to who they're doing business with. It's kind of like any other business, you wouldn't want to go to a realtor that had a bad reputation. You wouldn't want to go with a lawyer that had a bad reputation or a mechanic. It's the same thing. Unfortunately, there's a bit of a predatory aspect with a lot of vanity type presses. And then you've got sort of the big publishing houses, which have kind of become sort of conglomerates. They're all moving under, a couple of big umbrellas, and you're seeing less chances, I think, for people to get in those routes. I mean, there's always going to be, obviously, there's always going to be something there. But another thing that you've seen change, or that we've seen change lately, is that with the bigger houses, they used to do a lot more editing. They used to work much more carefully with the authors. And it seems like there's less of that going on now. There's more interaction with agents. So I'm going to delve into that a little bit. One thing that people often question when they start sort of dipping their toes into the water of this industry is, do I need an agent? There's not a one-size-fits-all answer to that. Some people do, some people don't. It depends on several things. It depends on what you're trying to market, what your audience is, what you want to do. If you're writing kind of more mainstream fiction that you think might, and you're trying to go for a very broad audience, it's certainly not going to hurt to try to get an agent. But again, it's another aspect of publishing where it's very important, if you're going to have an agent, to have a good one, because it's very easy to sign on a line and not realize how many rights you're giving away, how long those rights are. There are some contracts that are bad that kind of just don't have termination dates. It's another thing to look at is how long you're selling rights for. You want to look at whether you're selling exclusive rights or just first publication. That's particularly important with short stories for anthologies. Some anthologies, or actually quite a few, if you're doing a short story in a collection, some publishers will just ask for first rights, and then you're free to reprint it somewhere else. Others may ask for exclusive rights. So there's a lot of aspects to it. In a way, I would say publishing is kind of like dating. Because if you want to go through an indie or a larger publisher, then you're going to end up going through usually a submissions process, where you send yourself your stuff out, and at first you're checking your email every 10 minutes waiting for a response, and you get a little bit obsessed with it, and at some point you're going to get rejected, and like the first couple times it happens, you're going to be pretty depressed over it. You're going to be like, oh, my stuff sucks. But like with any art, you've really got to grow a thick skin and kind of get over it. And you've also just got to keep pushing forward with it. So that's another thing for people to, I guess, take in as one of the basics of publishing, is that you will get rejected at some point. Doesn't mean you're bad, just means that it wasn't a right fit. You can get rejected for many reasons. If you're bad, you will get rejected because you're bad, but you might also be rejected because the publisher already had something that was too similar, or they just didn't quite vibe with what you're doing. And I mean, there's so many things with books, it's impossible to please everybody. And if you try, you're just going to put out something that really isn't good to begin with. So it's important to write something that is true to you, and I guess make it as powerful and as strong as possible, get it edited or get feedback on it, and then decide which route you want to go, whether you want to look at an indie house, a smaller house, whether you want to self-publish, or whether you want to try and get a larger house. If you're going for a larger house, then you would need an agent, because a lot of them won't even look at subscriptions anyway. There are pros and cons to self-publishing. You have a lot more control over it, which is great. I mean, you've got final say on whatever you do. However, you've also got the expenses of the cover and printing and things like that. Not getting an advance unless you decide to write yourself a check. And then as far as going to an indie publisher, you'll have less expenses on yourself, but you'll also have less control over it, a little bit less control. Normally a small indie publisher, they may give you a small advance. If nothing else, they should usually would take care of the cover art for you. And there's also some benefits of marketing with when you're going through an indie publisher. There's also some benefits of marketing when you're going through yourself, because you have more control to do a sale or maybe join part of a box set or something like that that can help spread visibility. I think with that, I think I've rambled on and on. I guess to just wind down with just a couple of rules for people who are considering getting published. One, do your research. Two, make sure that your stuff is really good. Three, read the fine print. If you don't know what it says, look it up. There's plenty of resources out there for people to do that. Next would be, consider it like dating and look for somebody that, you know, you feel good about and that you feel like your stuff works with their line. And I guess fifth would probably be avoid vanity publishers at all costs. So with that, I will wind down.
And now Margaret Porter is going to talk about marketing.
Thanks, Steve. The best thing about book marketing is that you have written the book and it's going to be published, and you have the opportunity to market it. So you're starting in a really good place. There are, just to boil it down, there are two kinds of marketing. And probably most of you are thinking of one type of marketing, which is marketing your book to the consumer, which is marketing to the reader. But the other type is marketing to the trade. And that means to the distributors and to the booksellers that will be able to get your book to the consumer. And there are implications for both traditionally published and for the indie author related to marketing to the trade. Traditionally published authors, they have the advantage of a sales force and a publicity department within their publishing house. And those people will create the professional materials for promotion, and they'll also put together the sell sheets. And they have sales reps that will visit bookstores and distributors to promote the fact that your title exists. And whatever they produce, whether it's catalog copy, the sell sheet, the display ads, the artwork that they associate with your book, if they're taking out ads in the trade publications, all of that can be used in your personal promotion. So it's good if you can access that material and be in touch with the publicist at the publishing house, whether it's an independent small independent publisher or one of the majors. So you don't have to reinvent the wheel. Some of this is being done for you. If you're an indie author, you have to invent the wheel for yourself. And you have to create your own sell sheet. And you need to draw up the list of the bookstores. If you want to get listed in the Ingram Books catalog, you need to provide the information to them and pay for that listing. You need to meet booksellers, and you can work through organizations like New Hampshire Writers Project and the New England Independent Booksellers Association to find lists of distributors and booksellers and to make yourself known and to make it known that you've got a book coming out. If possible, you can work through a distributor that will get your book into the bookstores. That's a little bit harder for indie authors, especially if they're self-publishing. If you're with a small independent press, they can often take care of that for you. When you're marketing to the consumer, whether you're a traditional or an independent author, there are many, many options. You can send out advanced reading copies for blurbs and advanced reviews. You can plan, you can strategize your own campaign while you're writing the book. That's always a really good thing to do, because as you're writing the book, you get a sense of what is promotable about your book and what might be interesting to a local or a regional or a national audience. Your social media platform, this is an important thing nowadays. Some people are more comfortable with social media presence than others, and some people like to do something on every platform that exists, and others prefer to be very selective in which platform they use. I if I have time, I'll get to the, some of the advantages and disadvantages of each one. Some people like to start promoting their book before it's really a book. They like to be very public about the topic that they're writing about, or the setting, or something, some aspect of the book. And then other people like to wait until it's actually a finished book and they have a much stronger sense of what the theme might be or how to appeal to a readership. And I tend to, for myself, I tend to do it if I'm signing a contract. There's an announcement about the book once you have a release date. Definitely when you have a cover. That's always a big splash. That's a big time when you can do promotion, and it's a visual, so it works really well on the social media networks. I've done, with cover reveals, I've done blog tours where you can get a publicity person or a blogger that puts together blog tours, and then a series of blogs will push out the fact that you have the cover. And then also there's the point at which pre-orders are available. That's a very good time to promote your book. When you are planning to do, when you're developing a marketing plan, the first thing to do is to determine what your budget is going to be. If you are, whether you're independently published or published traditionally by one of the major publishers, you will have to do a lot of your own self-marketing and self-promotion. So you need to be aware that the publishers nowadays are not going to do everything for you. They can lay the groundwork and get you into the through the distributors and send sales reps to booksellers and promote your book at the large trade conventions that are regional around the country, but you will have to do a lot on your own. And the independent author is at an advantage because they always have to do it on their own, so they can be very creative and very self-directed and very much in control of the process for themselves, as opposed to having someone at the publishing house tell you what we're going to do for you or what we're not going to do for you, as often the case may be. The checklist, this is very much simplified, but the checklist for sort of pre-publication marketing would be, if I can read my writing here, some kind of an announcement, like copy, advertising copy, a sales sheet, advanced reader copies, promotional materials that you might do, things like bookmarks and business cards and things like that, which you can do once you have your cover art, and also once you might have some promotional quotes, blurbs from advanced readers. The pre-order announcement, that's a very important pre-publication point. And then if you're considering a publicist, you need to get referrals from other people and find out, get someone reputable who is going to deliver on what they say they're going to deliver. And the best way to do that is to find out from other people who might have used that person. It can be, as Morgan was saying about the predators in the publishing world, there are also predators and people in publicity who will promise you the world and say they'll get you book tours and get you bookstore events and charge you money for that, and then it might not happen in the way that they say that it will. Headshots and getting the JPEG or portable network graphic of your cover, make sure you get that from your publisher or that you have it available from a cover designer if you're independently published or published through a small press. And then book trailers, some people like to do those and find them effective. So, or if you don't know how to put one together yourself or you're not willing to learn, you can usually find some very tech savvy young people in film schools or at high schools or local community television studios who can do that sort of thing for you. Putting together a press kit is important, especially as you get closer to the publication point. And then when you get to the point of publication, having your announcement, I usually send a postcard announcement to my mailing list, and then press releases to newspaper, radio, television with contact information, the web links, advance quotes. And at this point, you want to stress any kind of, if your book is connected to an anniversary, like a World War II anniversary or a landing on the moon, which is about to happen anniversary, things like that that will be a little bit more of interest to the general public. In nonfiction, this is a very big thing as well. A lot of publishers plan their schedules tied in with certain release dates, and authors who are savvy enough to figure out that it's going to be the whatever anniversary of this great event and plan ahead some years to write a book about it are always at a disadvantage, and they'll get on NPR and be interviewed nationally and get articles about them. It's a little bit harder for fiction writers, but sometimes that can work for a fiction writer as well. Also, you can stress local tie-ins. This is very, very important as well, to get local media coverage, which is basically the easiest kind to get because you're a local author and local people are interested in other local people. For promotion is generally thought of as paid placement. That would be a display advertisement in print media or a radio advertisement. And then publicity is what's considered the free kind of marketing. And that's the sort of thing that we mostly do on the web and local media interviews that are not paid, that you actually instigate yourself or solicit yourself. Learn to excise the most pertinent quotes from any reviews that you get. You're not going to quote the whole review in your publicity material, so you need to be very selective. And don't just rely on that if you get the review. A reviewer says, "This is the best book ever." That may not actually be the best quote to take out of the review. If there's something said about your book that gives a flavor of the book or the characters, that's always a good choice. As well as you can say, "Best book ever, ... and then carry on with a sentence or two from a review that tells a little bit more about the book, because that will entice the reader a little bit more. The social media platforms, I think everybody probably knows. There's Twitter, there's Facebook, there's Instagram. Instagram is very visual, and as a professional photographer, I've only just sort of become active on Instagram. Goodreads is really important. That's a fast reader community, and setting up pages for your books and an author page there is pretty much essential, I would say. YouTube is a place to post your interviews. You can get someone to interview you. You can talk about your book to someone else, or just film yourself talking about the book, and you can also upload your book trailer. There's Pinterest and LinkedIn. And the last two I really don't know a lot about. I know authors that use them, but I don't want to divide my time too much between writing and social media, so I tend to be really selective. And I didn't say what I write. I write, as Margaret Porter, I write biographical historical fiction. My most recent novel is Beautiful Invention, a novel of Hedy Lamarr. And I have had a really wonderful time doing the marketing and promotion of that, even to the point of wearing a replica 1940s dress with California print and Hollywood scenes on it to tie in with the fact that I'm writing Hollywood books set in the past in the golden age of Hollywood. And that Hedy's book is my 13th novel. I have had, I've been published by almost every New York publisher as well as independent presses as well. So thanks very much for having me. It's been fun.
Thank you, Margaret. I'm gonna ask each of the authors to mention where you can get in touch with them, website, or how can we find you on the web? Mm-hmm. Cynthia?
Well, I'm social media all over, Facebook, Twitter. I have a website, Instagram. I'm out there.
All right.
CynthiaNeal.com with an E, Neal with an E.
I guess my hub would be my website, which is morgansylvia.com. I am also on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Pinterest, and a couple sites that I've forgotten about and don't use anymore. But yeah, if you just Google Morgan Sylvia, I also have an Amazon author page, and you can find all my books there.
Okay. Margaret?
My website is margaretporter.com. I'm on Twitter as @MargaretAuthor. I'm on Instagram as @AuthorMargaretPorter. In my previous incarnation as a genre fiction writer, I was MargaretEvansPorter.com, so sometimes that will come up, but the current iteration is MargaretPorter.com, and there is a contact form on my website that will that will deliver any communication directly to my inbox for my email program.
All right, thank you. I'm going to open it up for questions from the audience. I would ask you to speak up so that the microphone will pick you up. And I may repeat the question if I need to make sure the microphone picks it, to make sure the microphone picks it up. You can direct your question at any one of the authors or all three, but I always ask that each author respond to each question so we get a different viewpoint. Yes?
We're all very fascinating. Very, very good. A lot of roads have been traveled with the three of you. I do have a question for Maureen. You mentioned box set. What does that mean?
Mostly it's something that you see on Amazon. I actually might have used the wrong term, but you might see kind of a like 10 different zombie novels that are being sold as one unit, and they might come from a bunch of different authors that decided to do it together, or there's different ways to do that, but that might be, I think I was speaking about that as an example of something that you might be able to have a little bit more control of if you're self-publishing. So that was what I was talking about. You might see something about paranormal vampire romances, five different you know, novels in one little collection or something like that.
So you kind of promoted yourself then?
Yeah, it's usually different authors getting together, and you might see everybody marking their stuff down to a certain lower than what you usually would be, because the point is to reach different audiences, because if you've got five different writers and their audiences all buy the same book set, then, you know, it can be very beneficial as far as, you know, growing your readership.
Does that go on Amazon?
Yeah, it's more of a collection of book, but you also will sometimes see ebooks done that way, where you might download kind of a package deal. I don't know if is there another term that I'm not thinking of for that.
Box set is what I'm familiar with.
Okay.
And sometimes an author who's written several books, and I need to do this with some of my early material, several novels, especially if they match a particular theme or if they're part of a series of books, continuing series, and I've done both of those. I've got some theatrical novels, and then I've got a 1-2-3 trilogy series. And you can blend them together, hook them together, and they're sold as a box set by an individual author with all the books. Omnibus edition is what they used to be called, or what they're called in print, where you've got, like, if you had all the novels of Jane Austen in one book. So, but because of the ease of digital and the ease of downloading, it's made it very easy for authors to either band together and do contribute. Each person contributes a different thing to it, or for one author to compile all of her works into one downloadable format.
Seems like that would be a good route to go, either yourself, if you've got a number of books. Like, I do children's books, so I pump like four together. But the trick is to lower the price as a box set, you're thinking?
The price point needs to be advantageous, but the sales can also be very high, so it balances out.
Another example of that might be, you're probably seeing them now for the Game of Thrones set, the books that are out so far. You could buy them all as one set, and they've done, I don't know how many, but they keep changing the covers out, so you might see a hardcover version, and then you might see a different version with paperback covers, and, you know, each time a book comes out, there's usually an updated, I think they've done at least four or five different covers for that series that I can think of, and they've, you know, you can buy those as a set.
So is that why you see some books with a lot of different covers that are old books that come up through the years and putting covers on it?
It's one reason. That's one reason, and they just sometimes, when there's a second or third edition, they just refresh the art. You know, maybe they're the fifth book is being released and they're refreshing the cover for the first four or something like that. There's different reasons
for it. The inside is usually the same. Or you could update, add things to it, I guess.
Yeah. You could go one route, like, I guess, to go back to the Game of Thrones reference. There's one set of covers that's just hardcover, and I think they're all solid covers with maybe there might be like a sword or something on some, and there's a paperback set that's kind of similar, and then there's another set that's got more like actual art on it, and those are just the ones I'm thinking of off the top of my head. As far as Game of Thrones, I'm sure there'll be more coming out if he finally releases the other two.
But would people buy both, or just it's a new audience, a younger audience, or whatever?
Another benefit is if you re-release it, it's considered a newer release, so there might be benefits as far as getting on sales for new releases or something like that. I'm not really sure exactly how the algorithms work, collectors, but also just, you know, anything you can do to broaden your readership, anything you can do to attract a reader is usually worth a shot.
ISBN number or anything?
I don't think there would be a new ISBN number, but I can't. Yeah, I can't say 100% sure. I believe the ISBN is tied into the copyright, so I wouldn't think so, but I could be wrong. Right.
Cynthia, anything
to contribute? No, I don't have any experience. I have a number of box sets myself. But it sounds like a good idea to get together with. But I have a series, and they're published with two different publishers for, I call it a series, but you can read the books independent of one another. Might be a good idea.
Seems
to
like
just sell it as a box set. Yeah, yeah.
You can see it.
Yeah, but I've had the one publisher I have, has been very, very supportive in doing whatever they can with pre-release and doing all the marketing things, and virtual book tours is another thing that has been very beneficial. So, but I could bring it up. That's another thing with a smaller publisher, is they're more accessible, and they're more willing to work with you, and then, you know, getting lost in the shuffle unless you're an A writer with a big publisher. But so far it's good, but then there's only so much, and like with all of us, we have to pound the pavement. We have to do everything we can do. But I like that idea of box set. Yeah.
Another question I have, I don't know who would answer this, but Barnes & Noble, they're always tricky to get into, and they have all these regulations, and they say you have to go indie press, or they want to buy through their own distributor or something or other instead of Amazon, they get Amazon. Do you have any comments around any of that swirl of whatever? I don't know if it's a direct question, I just asked.
Well, I found them very supportive in the area and in New York, where I'm from. And they, you know, the only thing is that if they don't sell, I think it's 3 months, I can't recall, I haven't done one in a while, then they return them. But they've been very good as far as doing all the publicity and very supportive. They don't put it on the big table at the entrance. That's the corporate, you know, publishers that are there. But I haven't done a book event in a long time. So, but they've been very supportive.
I don't have any experience on returns, but one of the things that Barnes & Noble was saying, you have to have a return policy. But what do you guys do on a return policy? What does that mean? You have to pay for it?
No, it's taken care of through the distributor and the publisher. Unless you do consignment, you know.
Fortune.
Yeah. I mean, some of them do consignment, but then you're running around. And I had one bookstore that took 15 of my first book. They never paid me a cent. And it's a very well-known bookstore, and I won't say it on air. I'd like to, because it was unethical, even though it was inexpensive. I mean, they were marked for the trade school, the trade books for schools. And terrible that they did that. But where did I go from there? I can't remember. What was the question about returns?
What kind of return policy?
Consignment. So consignment is hard, unless sometimes I'll do just one or two bookstores, because I can keep track if I trust them. Like the Bookery just opened up, and they thought it would be, because I have three different publishers, and they thought it would be best to just bring in my own books, and then they would sell them on consignment, but they no longer do consignment. So I'm in the process now, I'm going to Ingram, because Ingram is the only distributor,
right,
to get them stocked.
Right. Is Ingram hard to deal with?
Well, I haven't dealt with them. My publishers do.
So you don't have to sign under a contract?
No, I think you, do you do anyone with independent or self-publishing?
I would have to actually check and see if my publishers did. The independent one that I put out, I actually haven't even delved into that yet. So,
yeah.
Margaret?
It's done through the publisher, and they set the return policies and the discount rate,
right,
and all that kind of bookstore, yeah, distributor stuff.
Right, they deal with it all.
But if you're self-publishing,
self-publishing
and you're doing it through Ingram, I guess. But I'm well aware that there are how-to books that can walk you through,
yeah,
it. The Ingram website itself probably has. They have two divisions. There's Lightning Source, which, and then there's Ingram Spark, and I think the second one is the one that you would be working through if you're self-publishing.
Through Lightning.
Yeah.
Source.
Yes, I think that's true.
And it gets complicated because you're not really sure. Oh, should I do this? I'm having trouble with this one because I've self-published like 8 or 9 children's books. I do good in the small bookstores, but to get into Barnes & Noble, I've got 1 or 2 in there now, but they seem to change their mind like the wind, depending on who you're talking to and which Barnes &
Noble
you're talking to.
Right, it depends. If you have a good CRM, you make a good, just good relationships with
personal
them.
Connection,
yeah,
it's the best.
And I have become a friend of one who,
yeah,
was so supportive of me, and
yeah,
and she moved from Nashua to Manchester back and forth, and so, you know, those two bookstores, and I'll tell you, I did all kinds of events there.
And
very supportive, so it's good just to get it. And they want to support local authors. They may not be able to keep the book, you know, for as long as a publisher would on the shelf. Or it's up to the bookstore, each bookstore.
Yeah.
But the relationships with the managers of the CRMs are really good, are important.
It seems like if people ask for the book at like Barnes & Noble, then they get it in or they order it.
Yeah, that's a good way. I would tell people, just ask for my book.
Yeah,
you know, they say,
yeah,
do you want me to buy from you? But initially, I would say, well, I'd like it to get in the bookstore, so don't buy from me. Because, you know, I order, like, I get 50% off to order my books from my publisher so I can go to festivals and things. But in the beginning, it's really good just to tell all your readers, order my book from Barnes & Noble so it gets exposed.
Yeah. Yeah. For any bookstore, too, to get a book signing in, some of them you have to sell so many.
Yeah, they're not doing them as much as they used to. And libraries don't have a budget, and I don't do
libraries.
I mean, I did Gratis Forever, and I just don't do that anymore. And I do teas, and you do other things. People want to be entertained. And so, you know, you who was it did beer ads? Hemingway and someone else, whether they had a sign made, I think it was Maupassant, had a plane take a flag across saying buy my book or the name of the book. People have done all kinds of things. I could have that wrong, but I think so.
I ran across one book at some fair I was at, one book company. I don't know if it's a book company or what, but they would have their distributors have like home parties with books. You've probably heard of that too.
Mm-hmm.
They sell like a ton of books,
right,
that way.
Right.
And Mary Kay or something.
The book clubs too.
Book clubs.
Yes, book clubs are great.
They are.
And people who know you're an author, if they read your book, they'll, you know, everyone in the book club will get it. And then that, you know, I've done next week or week after, I'm doing another. I've been invited to do book clubs. I was down south doing a book club event in near Atlanta, and it's just a lot of fun.
It's
so interesting to sit around and talk to people as a group of people who've read your book.
And food and wine.
And food and wine. And
relaxed.
Relaxed.
But not for children's.
Books, they don't really do the
children's
used
to bring
books,
cookies and
yeah,
decorate them.
Yeah,
with
there
their,
would be a
character,
way,
you know.
A kids' book club.
Kids'
book
club. Like at schools, sometimes they'll have a budget or you could get a sponsor or a grant or something.
Yeah, schools are great to go to as well.
They're losing
their
funding too on everything, so they don't.
Yeah.
And
always carry your books in your trunk.
That's right.
Get in conversation and people say, oh, where do I buy? And then you catch them because they'll say, Where can I buy it? On Amazon? And, oh, yeah, can I go to Barnes & Noble? Yes, but I have them in my trunk.
And I'll sign it for you.
And I'll sign it for you. And then they go, okay, thank you. And they walk away. They were just being polite, saying, where do you sell them? Not always.
We'll buy it that way.
Yeah, I have sold that way. You do. I've done everything but stand on my head because I'm not flexible enough.
What countries have you traveled?
Well, Ireland.
Ireland
mostly.
Yeah.
I think that's it. Yeah. Canada.
There was a girl at Rye Library about a month ago. I think she was the author. I can't remember her name, but she was the artist, I think, and the author picked her up someplace, and they went all over the world with this children's book.
Well, I'm going to do it with a cookbook, Transatlantic Tart.
Yeah,
we're going to we're planning.
That'd
and my friend Margaret Mitchell is her name, so we can really play up Margaret Mitchell. And she owns a B&B and been in hospitality in Scotland for years before they moved to Hampstead.
Wow.
So that will be. And she's wonderful. She's full of life and spunk, and we'll probably kill each other. Her being Scottish and me Irish, So far we're doing pretty good as friends.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Just for publicity, though.
I know.
The Irish.
Got to have fun with it now.
So is it all tart recipes?
No, there's just a play on words.
Okay.
Transatlantic tarts.
Yeah.
But there's tarts and there's scones, and then we're also addressing some gluten-free recipes. And, my pavlova and a hat box, I use all organic, and fresh is most important.
Yeah.
And anyone that is gluten-free knows how to change a recipe. So, but anyway, is there anyone else? I feel like I'm doing too much talking here, girls.
Are there other questions? Does anyone have anything they want to say to wrap it up from our authors? No, we've covered everything. All right. I'm just going to take a moment to thank WSCA Community Radio here in Portsmouth for letting us use their facilities. And I want to thank our authors for coming in tonight and doing a great job. And please let people know that this series of podcasts is on mattpublishing.net, M-A-A-T, publishing.net. And this one will be posted as soon as I get caught up with mixing down the last one. And I want to thank Marilyn Carter, the other half of Mott Publishing, for providing some snacks, which we are now going to enjoy. Thank you.
Thank you.